Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Please note, season one of this podcast was recorded before the passing of our beloved Suzanne Summers. Suzanne, we love you. We miss you. And this podcast is dedicated to you.
We're two stepsisters bonded, living Hollywood lives. Even if one of us is watching for the very first time, all the good, the bad, the barky, take a peek inside. Let's rewatch and relive the good times. Keenan and they can give you deja vu.
Hi. This is Keenan and Lakin Give You Deja Vu, the rewatch podcast where we will take turns breaking down every episode of the 90s sitcom Step by Step in order. I'm Stacey Keenan, and I played Dana Foster.
And I'm Christine Lakin, and I played Al Lambert.
We're going to tell you how it really went down because we were there. Now, for me, this is my first time ever watching the show. I never watched it, not while it was on, and never since then until now, for purposes of this very podcast.
And for my children, it's the first time they've watched the show, and they have a lot of thoughts. They're now, very opinionated.
But Lakin, you did watch the show.
I did.
In real time, right? I watched it kind of as an audience member.
Yep, watched it growing up, watched it in real time, saw a few episodes even in between here and there randomly. But we are truly doing binging like the entire season of season one right now. And I have to say it's pretty hilarious in my household because none of my children nor my husband have ever seen the show. So,
and they're shady as hell.
They're shady as hell.
They're not fans and they're shady. So that's
we maybe
knew that, but we're kind of seeing it come like, to a new level.
I feel like my kids are like the two old men in the balcony of the Muppets.
Oh, so they're just heckling. Yes! They're just talking smack up there.
This again? When is it over? Can I watch Blippi?
Like, wow. It's just,
why is there so much kissing?
Yeah. Well, this week, we will be covering season one, episode 7, Yo-Yo's Wedding. The original air date of this one was November 1st, 1991. So, where this kicks off, adorable little baby Brendan, the youngest of the Lambert children, who is just a darling little cherub. His birthday is coming up. And apparently, you know, Frank's looking forward to this. Normally, they have this kind of tradition where it's bowling and pizza. So Carol steps in, you know, she's the new stepmom in this family. And she's kind of pitches Brendan on what if you had a real kids' birthday party with hats and, you know, all the traditional stuff, all the real birthday party stuff. And Brendan is into it. And then,
because apparently he's never had a birthday party before because Frank just doesn't know how to do that as
I guess as a dad. He doesn't know how to do a party.
I guess his other kids never had parties. Who knows? Once again, we're, you know, before Carol, the Lambert kids were just living in filth,
living in squalor, not having birthday parties by a wolf.
They've never had a cake. I don't know.
Right. So, yeah. Cake. That's another thing.
Cake.
And on top of that, Carol's going to take it a step further, and she's going to arrange for the famous, the epic Yo-Yo the Clown to be the entertainment at this party. And Brendan is pumped. Meanwhile, a letter shows up indicating to Carol and Frank that their wedding in Jamaica at the wedding shack where they got hitched over there in the Caribbean has been shut down and their wedding was never legal.
Null and void.
And Carol is freaked. They've been living in sin. She actually does a kind of damsel in distress, sort of crossing her arms over herself sort of gesture.
Yes.
Which is sort of so silly.
The kids are cheering, of course, right, because they're like, yes,
this nightmare can be dissolved. We've reached the end of this madness. But of course, Carol and Frank, they want to rectify this situation as soon as possible. They do not want to be living in sin. So right away, they set up, they plan to get married at City Hall. And, you know, Frank kind of pitches it to Carol like, oh, we'll have a, you know, City Hall is a little depressing for them as a place to get married. But, you know, Frank kind of pumps it up a little bit. Oh, you know, we'll get a romantic lunch and we'll do this and that.
Have a nice champagne.
Yeah.
We'll make it cute.
Yeah. So Carol shows up and it just must be mentioned that she is wearing a blue skirt suit.
Large shoulder pads.
It's, you know, it's got the buttons down the front of the jacket. It's a short sleeve. It's puffy. It's very puffy on the, sleeve, but short sleeves. Very shapely, little pencil skirt.
Mm-hmm.
Super cute. Look, if I were to find that at a Goodwill today, would I buy it? Yes.
Yes.
Would I wear it? Indeed. Yeah. So she's got the bag, the heels. She's looking quite stunning. And I think, you know, what's kind of fun about this scene is she shows up at City Hall and it's, you know, it's government bureaucracy. You know, she goes to the window and you have the miserable government employee back there, you know, who tells her she has to fill out form, you know, 367B or whatever.
Like stand in line, but nobody's there.
But there is no one in line. So then Carol walks straight up to the window. So when the woman tells her, you have to get in line. So she walks through the kind of velvet rope, like stanchions that yes. are forming the line. There's no one else in the entire place, but she walks, she goes through and gets in the line. And then the woman is willing to help her. And
then she's like, next.
Right. And then the woman tells her she needs, you know, she has to get that form 367B from the next window. So Carol steps to the next window and that same miserable woman pops open the next window to give her the form.
It was a very funny.
Which I must say, I'm a deputy district attorney now. I work in government and it is like that. There are times when I have to go to the clerk's office at a courthouse and you know, maybe for some offices, they have some kind of mission statement on the wall or they have some kind of inspirational quote.
It doesn't say hang in there.
Right. Like if you can dream it, you can do it or something like that. And a lot of these government offices, particularly I'm going to say clerk's offices and courthouses, I feel like their mission statement and their motto is no.
Right.
I feel like there's a, you know, instead of that, if you can dream it, you can do it up on the wall across from where they're all working. There's just, it's just painted no, just the word no.
Maybe they somehow got all of the like cast offs from Dare and it's like, just say no.
Just say no. And it's, they love it. It's inspiring. It's motivating. It drives them. So you'll see sometimes where you go in there. And in my case, you know, can I possibly get a certified minute order from da-da-da? And you just, when they have the opportunity to tell you no, the joy, you can just tell they just look forward to saying, no, you have to go to the second floor and go to this window. Anyway, so I happen to enjoy that moment of government, you know, bureaucracy. Anyway, so now Frank shows up and on the contrary to Carol, who looks like she just stepped off the set of Dynasty in this blue dream skirt suit, he came straight from the construction site. He's covered in dry rot. He's an absolute mess. Adding insult to injury, he says he can't do lunch because he has to go straight back to work. And he hands her a burrito.
Like a greasy bag.
A greasy bag off of a truck. So Carol, being Carol, freaks out and essentially says, you know what, Frank? I'm not going to marry you.
Not like this.
And she takes her skirt suited ass and she walks right out of there. And then the judge who was going to marry them is standing there eyeballing that burrito and asks Frank if he's going to eat that. which I like. So now they're back at home. Frank apologizes to Carol and he says, you know what? I'm going to give you the wedding of their dreams. Well, unfortunately, it turns out the reverend who they would have married them at a proper wedding, not this city hall garbage, he is going to be leaving town. How does Carol know this? She does his hair. She knows. So they kind of realize that this wedding is going to have to be the same day as Brendan's birthday. That's the only way they're going to be able to fit it in with the reverend leaving town, you know, making his flight or whatever it is, and still being able to marry them. So can they possibly do both in one day in one house?
Of course. No problem.
This was crazy. So you're going to have a six-year-old's birthday party, full blown. All the kids, the hats, the cake, the stuff. And then you're also going to have a wedding.
I just thought
in the
about
same
that,
house.
And I was like, okay, let's just think about this for a second. Knowing what I know about the last time my daughter had a birthday and how insane it was. And then also, by the way, we're just going to like renew our vows, just like a real quick, just like,
yeah, we're just going to
50 person vow renewal, yeah, like in over, the other room,
in this other part of the same house on the same day. It is absolutely wild. These people are wild.
They're wild.
So now here we are.
Also, who's going to be watching the children while they're getting married?
Unknown.
Cody?
Unknown. NFD. No further details. That's a little police report lingo for you there. So now, here we are. The party is full blown in the backyard. The kids are going nuts while the wedding is being set up in the living room. And then, oh no, a horrible call comes through. Yo-Yo the clown cancels at the last minute. And Brendan is absolutely crushed.
Crushed.
He's the birthday boy and he absolutely, Yo-Yo is a legend. And now he's not coming. And then Frank comes through and promises him Yo-Yo will be here.
Right.
Enigmatic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Don't know how that's going to work. But
also kind of feels like a total parent lie.
It does.
You know, like maybe the better version would have been, okay, well, Yo-Yo can't come, but Yo-Yo's cousin, Yu-Yu, Yu-Hu, or whatever, like maybe that would have been the better.
Bobo. Yeah. But somehow Frank promises that Yo-Yo is going to be there. And now, of course, Cody is part of the birthday party. He comes in at one point and he steps into the kitchen from the backyard where the birthday chaos is happening. And this was the most couture moment perhaps ever.
Yes.
And maybe we'll see. But so far, it is the most couture moment of this show. I can see this on a runway in Milan. He has an entire cape, poncho, however you want to call it, made of silly string. So the kids have silly stringed him so hard that he is completely caped all the way down to his ankles. And it's multicolored.
It was amazing.
It's very evenly done. So yeah, it's just kind of beautiful, kind of stunning.
I was like, did they just silly string him? Did they just use cans and cans and cans, or did they make that?
Did they form it and lay it out in a huge circle and then drape it over him, over his head? I don't know.
But it was unbelievable.
But it was stunning. It was epic.
Yeah.
Listen, if you see that on a runway soon, you know somebody was watching their step-by-step reruns. And, you know, Balenciaga or whoever just mopped that look.
Totally.
Stash that one away. Now, Carol comes looking for Frank because, hey, the reverend's here. He's got to go. We're losing him. He's catching his flight. He's leaving town. Where the heck is Frank? And it turns out Frank has transformed into Yo-Yo the clown and he is rocking the party. So he has a wig on. He's got the full face paint. He's got overalls. He's got pot lids that are tied to the insides of his knees so he can, you know, clap them and, you know, have a cymbal going when he wants. He's got the enormous scuba flippers on and
hand puppets.
Right. And he is killing. He is killing. The kids are absolutely loving it. Now, Carol is pissed because, of course, well, maybe not of course, but she's saying, well, you know, I guess our marriage must not be very important to you. And just again, sorry, but it must be commented on. Now, does she decide to repeat the blue skirt suit?
Oh, hell no.
No. That old thing.
Please.
No. Now she is wearing a pink skirt suit that has a kind of, I don't know, what do you call it? Laser cut, perforated sort of eyelet pattern cut out of the lower part of the jacket, kind of the peplumy area. Then she has a pink, I wouldn't call it a fascinator. It's almost a tiny, it's on that very thin line between yes. pillbox hat and fascinator. You've been on that line many times, haven't you? Of course. It's on that thin line. It's a little kind of, lozenge shaped hat.
With like a pointy pink front.
Comes to a point in the front, very 1940s. It has a pink veil.
Like a tiny little netted veil.
Cute.
It is such a good look.
And then a bow in the back. And then she has her hair up in a ponytail behind the back of the hat. It is so cute.
It's such a good look.
Yes.
Love.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes, absolutely love it. So, but ultimately, Carol comes out of her state of, you know, anger over Frank just kind of, I don't know, FTAing, failing to appear for their wedding, because she sees him, you know, what he's gone through to transform into Yo-Yo and how hard he is working to, you know,
make his,
I don't know, where'd he even get his set from?
I don't know.
He's just coming up with it in real time.
He's coming up with it in real time.
He's an improv genius. He's Will Ferrell. I don't know. but she sees the lengths that he has gone to save Brendan from this disappointment or to make good on his promise that Yo-Yo would be there. And her heart melts because of what a good father he is. And again, we see, you know, this couple, they reconnect in that moment. Now, they almost lose the Reverend. The Reverend actually leaves. And again, the kids and miserable old bitch Dana are so happy that this wedding is not going to
pushing him out the door.
Yeah, the wedding's not going to happen. And then they just make it back into the living room, into the wedding venue that is, you know, two rooms away from this riotous kids party in the backyard. And the Reverend kind of opens the door. Nope, I'm still here. And he pops back in. A moment that I liked. Frank realizes now, okay, the Reverend's here. It's happening. It's happening. The wedding's happening. And he's standing there at the end of the aisle and, you know, the wedding's going to start. So he whips off his wig as though he's in church and he's taking off his hat, which was really cute. Because he has this big, curly, it's not a clown wig. It's like Carol had a wig in the shop, maybe.
Yeah.
It's just a brunette, curly-haired wig. And he just pulls that off as though he's doffing his hat. It's kind of sweet.
The kids are like all walking down the aisle and we're all like
miserable
and like super pissed miserable. It's happening.
I think I'm wearing an Esprit dress. That dress really, it was kind of a, I don't know, like a knee length, floral on a dark background, V-neck, short sleeve. Anyway, I think I remember that. I think it was Esprit. R.I.P. Esprit.
I loved
that.
Do you remember the Esprit store?
Oh, yes.
Esprit was a thing.
That was one of the brands.
I know.
Yes. Had that kind of little French vibe. I don't even know if it was actually French.
I don't know. It was my favorite.
So the wedding happens. As the wedding is underway, the Reverend asks if anyone objects to the union of this man and this woman, and all the kids raise their hands. But they get overruled, and they have a very horny smooch, of course, who may kiss the bride. And now Frank and Carol are in wedded bliss.
Yes.
And that's the episode.
And, you know, the photos of them at their marriage is him in a clown face. So it's fitting.
Yeah, it's fitting. And this episode, like last week's episode, episode 6, there's no B story.
No B story.
There is.
Well, I guess it's the birthday party, but
it kind of, I mean, last episode 6 was definitely no B story. It was just simply the Lamberts trying to win, you know, the family games at the big town fair for that year. This one, yeah, I guess you could say that. I guess the party could be the B story and the wedding is the A story, but it kind of melds into just one big old A story. That's the episode.
This one was, I mean, I think it was really smart that they, of course, tried to figure out one more way to like throw a wrench into their quickie wedding, you know, that being probably the easiest way to say, oh, you know, Love Shack has now been torn down and it was never, it was never, you know, put into the files and you're no longer married. And because it sort of like recreates that whole moment. And who doesn't love a wedding? And
who doesn't love a wedding? Yeah, that's a good point. So it gives the audience a chance to actually see these people, you know, these main characters of this thing get married. But yeah, which who can, you know, yeah, why wouldn't you have a wedding on your show if you can?
And also it gives them an opportunity at the very end when Carol tosses the bouquet and it goes right over Penny's head and right out of her hands, Aunt Penny, into the person behind her. And then she just crumples into her mother. It's so funny.
Grandma, nameless grandma's shoulder.
Her reactions are always so funny.
And her hair. Her hair is just, Patrika Darbo, just, that hair is just incredible.
It really.
Just what a head of hair.
It really
what
is.
Hall of Fame. And then it also gives a chance to see that the kids, it's perfectly emblematic of the dynamics of the family. You know, the kids don't want this wedding to have ever happened. They would like to undo it if they could. They want to cancel this whole trying to merge these two families. And then it also gives the chance to show the odd couple that is Frank and Carol.
Yeah.
You know, here is Carol perfectly put together with her, you know, seemingly endless supply of flawless skirt suits and, you know, bags and heels. And then here is Frank, you know, covered in dry rot,
Right. Literally
a clown.
Right.
But yet they're so hot for each other.
The love is there. Yeah.
And it isn't just physical. You know, she loves Frank. Carol loves Frank because of, you know, what kind of takes the steam out of her anger is what a great dad he is. So it isn't just about him being, you know, hot construction worker Frank.
Right.
So there is that. But overall, I didn't love this episode again.
I know.
Watching these.
It wasn't super dynamic. It was a little bit by the book, you know, and then I don't know, the visual gag of him being a clown at their wedding is sort of like, all right. I mean, it's all right. But I think the best parts of it, A, the skirt suits, and B, that bureaucratic scene, I think was probably the more, that was probably some of the best hilarious kind of classic comedy in the episode.
Yeah, that show will give this show, as I'm learning since I'm now watching it for the first time, it will give you that. It will give you that kind of timeless comedy, you know, the bureaucratic government worker, you know, the judge who comes out to marry them, who's then, you know, eyeballing the burrito.
Right.
You know, just stuff, you know, it's a timeless, it's not connected to any moment. It's just a forever, you know, forever things that are just, but overall, I didn't love the episodes because some of the earlier episodes that we've had earlier in the season, I just loved them. And I was so pleasantly surprised to find out, hey, maybe the show's kind of good or maybe it's funny. And then these, so this time I watched episode 6 for last week's show and episode 7 together. And the two of them, it's been like a
mid slump. I feel like we're hitting a little bit of a mid slump.
Yeah, it's been a kind of an emotional roller coaster of the ups and downs of, you know, the newness of, oh, the revelation. Wow, I think I like this show. And then and then being disappointed by it. These episodes weren't that great.
Yeah, they weren't that great.
I mean, you gotta say it.
You know, they can't all be winners. Some of them are just gonna be like, you know, we're cranking out our C material.
Yeah, you know,
it's a lot of episodes.
Episodes for a season, but these days you just don't get that. I feel like, you know, if you're on a network, your time is so short to prove yourself before that show is just gone.
Yes.
I mean, if you think about, now, of course, you know, am I comparing Step by Step to Succession, prestige television? No. But still, I mean, even, you know, less prestige.
What are you talking about?
Less prestige shows like that. But really though, think about a season of Succession.
Yeah, right.
How tight that
season
is. Now, I know some people will complain, you know, if you look online, oh, this was a filler episode. There are no filler episodes. That season is arced.
I agree.
It is tight as hell. There's ripe conflict
happening every episode.
Woven, you know, story points and themes that are going to pay off and reconnect later are all woven in there.
Yeah.
So you just don't see even less prestige shows today do not have, I just don't think there's that kind of, I don't know what to call it. It's just higher stakes now or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I feel like sometimes when a show gets into its like latter years, and I'm sure we'll see this is what they call jumping the shark, people. Mm-hmm. It's a term that was created during Happy Days. I'll go back to Happy Days.
The same producers as this show, in case that's significant to you in some way.
When there was an episode of Happy Days when Fonzie literally jumps a shark going over, I think it's he's doing like a water skiing contest and he jumps
I thought
over,
it was a motorcycle.
It was a motorcycle.
I thought he did an Evel Knievel type of thing.
And he jumps over this big shark and it was just like, it was the episode that then everybody was like, what was that?
Yeah, the show must have reached a sort of turning point that's what we're doing.
Yeah. So that's become now the phrase that when we start to run out of storyline or when like it's gotten a little long in the tooth, the show maybe has jumped the shark. And I think you see that more often with shows that have gone on for, you know, 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah. Now this one, I don't think Step by Step jumped the shark in episode 7.
No.
I don't think that's what this is. It's more, it's something else that's
prepare yourself for that, though, because we will get to that in a few years.
I think this show is probably going to jump the shark many times. Probably. I don't know, but I'm guessing. And even today with shows, you see that. It's kind of the mid-season doldrums.
Right.
It's not the big, you know,
sweeps week episodes.
Yeah, or the big, you know, season opener or the big season closer, the big cliffhanger. We're just sort of cruising here. But I think maybe for some people, that is in some ways the weird appeal of this show. So let's talk about that after we come back.
Yes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we are back. So people talk about this show, and I say this just because I was on the show. So people, you know, if they want to talk about the show, and they may say to me, they like the show because it's nostalgic. It's from another time, and it's just, it's easy and it's comforting. The word comforting comes up a lot, and I still get letters. I just got a letter not long ago. I think it was from somebody in Germany saying it was just very sweet. I think the verb, and of course these Germans, their English is flawless, no grammar mistakes, no spelling mistakes, but basically saying thank you.
I have this like vision of you, sorry, I mean, like, looking at a fan letter like with a red pen being like, wow, okay, okay, A+.
Listen, I was a tutor for a little while. I did tutor English grammar, and it's, yes, okay, there is a little bit of that, but no, I don't do that.
No.
But I can't help but notice. You know, saying something like, thank you for the comforting, gentle laughter.
Oh, it's nice.
Something like that.
Right.
And I think even in these episodes that are not the best and that aren't the funniest and that are a little predictable, I mean, what do we think is going to happen? That Frank and Carol are not going to manage to get married by the end of the show. The Reverend is going to be like, F off, I'm leaving. And he just takes off and Frank and Carol are left holding the bag and the kids go, yay, now they're not married. I mean, we knew that wasn't going to happen, but there's just something about it where it's just comforting and it's gentle and it's everything that, you know, well-spoken German person said where it's just easy to watch.
It's easy to watch. And I think there's something about, you know, a lot of these shows from the 90s, like when I think back to some of them, it's the uncomplicated nature of fantasy, right?
Yeah.
So there's some things we watch because it's, you know, it's really stimulating and the complicated nature of this like intricate familial relationship is exciting to watch and dramatic. Like I'm talking about like Succession, right?
Yeah.
But then you have to really watch it. If you're not really plugged in, tuned in, or you're like my husband, you fall asleep on the couch every night, we should have a podcast called Why You Were Sleeping. And it's just a recap of everything we watch every night.
Were you explaining to Brandon what he missed?
Always. I'm always explaining. He's like, so what happened at the end of Barry? I'm like, oh, well, so-and-so died. It's just, it's gone.
You're just recapping all day long.
I recap every night.
Truly a professional recapper, but full-time.
I mean, I recap Below Deck. I recap Succession. I recap. There's a lot of recapping. But if you're not really plugged in, then you do kind of get lost in some of those complicated shows.
Yeah, you got to stay on your toes.
You're not going to get lost. Okay. No. You can be making potato salad for 15 hours, which I was doing last night, and watching episodes and like doing two or three things at once, or maybe napping, and you still kind of get the gist of what's going on.
Yeah. You're not going to miss anything.
And there is something sort of like easy about it. It's like, when I was a kid, I would come home and sometimes I'd flip the TV on while I did my homework. My mom hated that. It was not really allowed, but sometimes I would do it. But it would always be like a show, like a Saved by the Bell or something that was on in the background that you didn't really have to pay attention to.
Yeah.
But you could do something else at once. And there's something comforting about the listening to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I still have a visceral reaction. It's like a, what do they call that? Psychological thing, Pavlov's dog.
Yeah, Pavlovian
response. Yeah, to golf. Because anytime my dad watches a lot of golf, and anytime I listen to golf, I'll just fall asleep. It's like, there's golf on, like I'm out. Because so many afternoons on Sundays spent with my dad watching golf, me being so bored, waiting for him to turn the television and just falling asleep. And now I find it very comforting.
Yeah, it's like that. And I am surprised by people, younger people, people in their 20s, people who weren't around at the time that this show was on in the first place, finding the show and watching the show and having that reaction to it, that it's comforting and that it's gentle. Now, I don't think it's always going to be like that.
No.
I don't remember these episodes. Maybe because they're just, honestly, they're not that memorable. But there are other episodes that I do actually remember and that I think about. And I think about the storyline. The whole show is not like this.
No.
But at least for episodes 6 and 7, we're in this kind of little patch. Because there are going to be episodes that are going to try to teach a big lesson.
Yes.
You know, and those aren't going to be as...
The more you know episodes.
Right.
The more you know. It's funny because some of these are kind of ingrained in my mind, but I think it's because it was all so new for me. And my mom was taking lots of pictures all the time. So I do have a lot of memory, and I don't know if it's because it was also like new and exciting, or if it's because I've looked at the pictures so many times over the, you know, so many years. There are episodes I know in the middle seasons that I probably won't remember at all.
Yeah.
Going back to I feel like there's a whole black hole from season 3 to season 7.
Yeah. Where there's only the certain ones.
Yeah.
That really stand out, but these didn't.
No. Definitely not. I'm sitting here and I've been meaning to mention this, as we're recording this, I'm looking at your bookshelf and I love that the 3 Suzanne Summers cookbooks are in like right in my eye line. It makes me, I have all 3 as well.
Of course. Okay. So in case you didn't know, get with it because I almost called her Carol. I'm immersed in the show. So Suzanne Summers is quite a businesswoman, and, you know, meeting people and they maybe recognize you from the show and they're asking about, well, you know, what was so-and-so like? What was so-and-so like? And, you know, a lot of people want to know, is Suzanne Summers, what is she like?
And yeah, Cody and Suzanne Summers, I would get those two the most.
Yeah. And Suzanne is so sweet, just a lovely person, warm, fun, funny, but also, you know, people wanted to know if she was dumb.
Right.
I think because of her days on Three's Company and playing Chrissy Snow, who's famously just the iconic blonde, you know, airhead bimbo character. But Suzanne is not dumb. Suzanne is a tycoon.
Yes.
Suzanne is a businesswoman. Speaking of Succession, Logan Roy, blonde Logan Roy, except nice.
No, speaking of like, you look at people, I'll come back to like a businesswoman like a Kim Kardashian, where you look at someone who created a brand, who started in, you know, retail, then went to like perfumes, clothing lines, makeup, like, you go back to the 90s, people were not branding themselves.
And Suzanne did that.
And she did.
Early, early on. So, you know, after Three's Company and that whole atrocious incident where Suzanne had the unmitigated gall to ask for these on a number one hit show, to ask for the same amount of money as her male co-star was making on that unquestionably ensemble show.
The nerve.
When she had the gall to ask for that and they fired her.
Can you believe that? Like, let's just talk about that for a second. That happened, everyone. And not only did it happen, she was then labeled as being difficult and problematic.
And she is not and difficult. Greedy. There is not greedy for wanting to make the same as Ritter as the star right. of the show. And if you read her book, as I have, she has many books, but she has her autobiography and she talks about how security walked her off.
Yeah.
Basically. And then they did this thing, I think contractually, they were going to have to pay her anywhere, whatever, for the remaining episodes of the season or something like that. So what they figured to do or how they were going, maybe it was they had to explain, like, where the hell did Chrissy all of a sudden, right. all of a sudden, where did she go? So if you know this show, suddenly Chrissy disappears, but she calls in and leaves a message on the answering machine at the apartment with her roommates, you know, about, you know, she's visiting Aunt Phoebe out in Great Plains or whatever. And so she's calling to leave a message. And so security would walk her in to the stage and they would put her in a booth and she would record that audio of her message and security would walk her out.
It's so gross.
It is a disgrace. It is an absolute disgrace. Anyway, in terms of Suzanne, you know, so she went from being the hottest thing on the hottest show to all of a sudden people didn't want to work with her.
And she was like, barred. I mean, ABC would not, you know, this was the first time I remember her saying that she, step by step, she was coming back to do a show on this network. It was like very full circle in a way, because clearly by the 90s, all the hands had changed over and that was not the culture anymore.
And right. And she had done She's the Sheriff in there somewhere, but that wasn't the same. I remember that show not being on in prime time. Now, maybe I watched it later. I feel like it was an evening show. It wasn't a primetime show.
Right.
So this was her. And so she went to Las Vegas. She had a cabaret type of show where she would sing and have it, you know, and she won Performer of the Year in Vegas mm-hmm. and she had this whole Vegas show. But yeah, she kind of was exiled by the industry. Can you imagine?
For a good while.
Ugh. So, but you're exactly right. She branded herself. So she had cookbooks.
She had many books. She had her autobiography.
Yes.
She talks a lot about her life.
And growing up with her dad. And she's very public about this, that her dad was an alcoholic and what it was like growing up with him.
And then there were multiple books that came out after with other people's stories of, you know, growing up as adult children of alcoholics.
Yes.
And then she kind of got into this like health and wellness avenue because she is very fit herself and loves to cook. And
yes, she's an aesthete, if you will. She loves cooking and food and beautiful things and, you know, she's
table settings and entertaining.
Yes. And all of that.
All of it. So she kind of went on this wellness and cookbook phase and they did phenomenally well.
Yes. And she gave all of us our own copies of the cookbook and I cooked from that thing.
Me too.
There are fundamental cooking, you know. Now, I mean, I can cook a little bit.
I can cook a little bit,
but thank you, darling.
You are. I still think about the salmon I had the last time I was here.
What was it?
And the mushroom soup. Oh my God. My husband kept saying, stop saying how good the mushroom soup is because he doesn't like mushrooms, but he was eating it and he loved it. And I kept saying, apparently that night, I had a lot of wine, that he doesn't like mushrooms and he's eating it because it's so good. And look, he's eating it because he doesn't even like mushrooms. He was like, shut up. Stop telling her that.
And what was the salmon? I don't remember.
It was this delicious salmon and it had like, maybe it was like a parsley on top. It was, I think you had baked it.
Well, it had to be more than that. It
was like in a sauce. It was, I have a picture of it.
Okay. All right. If I see the picture, maybe I'll remember. Anyway, a lot of the fundamental, and at some point I thought about going to culinary school and I that was a whole thing. Anyway, I didn't do that. I went to law school, but a lot of fundamental things I learned from Suzanne's cookbook.
Same.
And, you know, essential recipes that I still use. So if you are out there and you want to pick up a real solid book. There's three of them, as you're looking at right now, three cookbooks.
Yes.
Highly, highly recommended. And that ties into the whole Thighmaster thing.
Right.
And I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Suzanne wasn't just the, you know, attractive actress that they brought in to be the spokesmodel. She owned that product.
And that is the difference, everyone.
Rich dad, poor dad.
Yep. When you license something, like someone comes to you, say you're a Real Housewife, and they say, we have this lipstick line. Do you want to put your name on it? And you're like, cool, sure. You get a fee for everything that you sell, and it's your name, but you don't own it.
Right. Or they may pay you just to appear on the infomercial and
right.
pay you, you know, your day rate or whatever it
Bowflex.
Is, the union rate. Yeah. To show up and do those commercials or do those ads. But that's not the same as you
that.
Owning the product.
However, yes.
If but you, when you own the product.
It's a whole different ballgame.
It's a whole different story. So Suzanne with her husband, Alan, they were a great couple. You know, Alan was a real business person. Suzanne was a real business person. So the two of them, you know, to use the phrase power couple, absolutely. And yeah, they own that product. And Thighmaster was at its height during Step by Step. So,
yes.
You know, on a TV show, you have an audience. So you have a live audience who actually comes in. It's like if you see these, I don't know, what do you, if you, the loose, okay, I'm having a stroke right now.
Okay.
Let's just start over. We don't need to have a stroke on the middle of the podcast.
It's very
just
exciting,
trying to
though.
Explain a very simple idea. If you've ever seen a 1950s TV show, if you've ever watched Mrs. Maisel and you've seen
right.
those episodes
right.
where she's shooting that show and it's the 1950s and you have an actual live studio audience, it's a raked
stands.
Yes, stands. It's
or if
a
you've
raked
ever been to
set
a rodeo.
Of stands. Yeah.
It's like sitting in rodeo stands.
Kind of like that. And then the cameras are lined up. The cameras are almost like the barrier between the audience and the set. And mm-hmm. then there it is. It's happening. Now, it's not live in the sense of the show is not live on the air, but it's
right.
live in front of that audience. But anyhow, there is a warm-up person who's kind of a stand-up comedian type of character, always a dude for some reason, always a man. And they weren't, you know, they kind of do the entertainment because there's an actual production happening. There's crew
yes.
members running around. There are
pulling
things going
cables.
Wrong. There's things that have to be pick this up, retake, reshoot that. And you have an audience sitting there for all of that. So this poor person, imagine that gig, has to keep this interesting and keep these people from getting up and walking out and
yep.
entertain the audience. But one of the bits that was always part of that warm-up person's, you know, set, if you will, was giving away a Thighmaster
yes.
and having, doing some kind of dumb, you know, in using the audience, setting up some kind of dumb competition or something that they had to do. You know, you pick a couple people and have them, you
sing
know,
a song or
do something silly
do a dance
in front
or,
of the audience.
Yeah.
And then the winner, you know, the audience votes
assigned
on who's better.
Thighmaster.
Assigned Thighmaster. And yes, Suzanne gave all of us our own Thighmasters as well.
Yep. I had one. You put it between your knees and squeeze. That was
yes.
the phrase.
Yes. And then there was the butt master.
The butt master.
And the guy master.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It was for men. It had harder resistance to it.
Yeah. It was, I mean, it was really, you know, this was also, I feel like the 90s was such a moment of fitness, diet culture. Like it was really, there was a lot of that in the zeitgeist. Remember like low carb, low fat, like
oh.
we, all of that, you know, nonsense.
The low fat thing was huge at the time.
Yeah.
And it, you know, of course it's such the opposite now where everyone's just eating
ketoing
an
their
entire
way.
Cow every day. And yeah, but it was no fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But, you know, and she's done so many other things too. I mean, she had her hand in like beauty products now.
There's a jewelry line.
Jewelry line.
She had food products. Suzanne invented Splenda before there was Splenda.
Ah.
Do you
remember
that?
I did not know this.
What?
I didn't know this.
How did you not? Okay. We'll discuss this when we get back. Let's take a little break.
Splenda. Hey, I'm shocked.
We'll be right back.
Deja vu.
We're back. Yes, Suzanne. Okay. So yes, Suzanne's cookbooks were, they weren't just cookbooks. It was weight loss.
Right.
It was meant to be a lifestyle. So
right.
not just, you know, be on a diet and try to lose some weight. It was
about like food combination.
Right. So if you eat this particular way, you will lose weight and you will keep it off. And the cookbooks were, here's what to eat.
And it was all like kind of designed by, she lived in France half the year. She would go there on the hiatuses. She loved France, loved the south of France.
And she's a fancy queen. Okay. Yeah. She has a home in the south of France.
She would always talk about Saint-Tropez. but she had a lot of friends there and French, they're all having like, full fat lattes and like butter and cheese, and they're all walking around and drinking wine.
And this was so different from the no fat 90s whole idea.
No alcohol, fat, no carbs. You can't ever eat, chocolate. And that was very different. I mean, in Europe, that's all anybody eats, and they're all very fit and healthy. Portion control is one thing, I think, but also it was kind of this idea of combining certain foods and when you have your fat and et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. And it is true. Suzanne's thing was a lot of certain carbs you just don't eat.
Right.
You don't eat white pasta. And do you know, I adhered to that for decades.
Oh,
this was very influential on me.
I remember us talking about
cookbooks. Oh, it was an obsession. No, no potatoes, no carrots, no corn.
Because of all the sugar in it?
Because of the starchy, sugar, carby thing. And definitely no, not white rice. I would have brown rice, but not white rice, definitely no. I mean, I ate whole wheat pasta for years. And it was only very recently that I finally, one of my friends, who is evil, for my birthday, gave me pasta. This was her gift to me for my birthday. And it was this certain really fancy brand of Italian pasta. And it is so good. I mean, it is superior. It cooks up better. It's al dente. It's beautiful. Yum. And so all these years later, can you imagine? I finally said, you know what?
Life's
the whole wheat pasta.
Why?
Now, whole wheat pasta, it can be good if you cook it right and if you buy the right brand. It's perfectly doable. It's not bad. It really isn't. But white pasta is better.
Of course.
So much better. So all these years later, I have finally unleashed, I have untied the binds of the Suzanne Summers cookbook from the 90s. That was a big thing. No white pasta.
Yeah. I remember her. So we came back. This is one of my favorite Suzanne stories. We came back from a hiatus, and I want to say this was like getting into season six, five or six, something like that. Suzanne always wore these beautiful rings. I was always like obsessed with her rings.
She did eventually have a jewelry line.
Yeah. She had this beautiful pear-shaped diamond that she wore, but then she had these like stacked kind of, different stacked sort of diamondy rings.
Platinum and diamonds.
Yeah. The ring had grown. The ring sizes had grown. There was another stack on top of the other rings. And I remember seeing it and going, oh my gosh, I love your ring. And she said something to the effect of, darling, when you have a bestseller, you too can get a ring like this. But she meant it in a way that I understood, which was, I work really hard and I've made, like, having a bestseller is not just writing a book and like throwing it out to the ether. You have to pound the pavement. You have to go and do all the press. You have to, it's like, it's a job
to move
that book, go to the book signings and like connect with the fans. And
this was, you couldn't just hop on Insta and be constantly pushing content. That did not exist.
No. So it was this like moment where I was kind of like, oh, I see you. I see you. I see how hard you work. And you're right. When you work hard, you do whatever you want. Like, she was like the ultimate lady boss. It was really inspiring.
Yes, she has been for many years. Oh, so I didn't tell you.
Splenda.
So yes, part of the whole eating plan was not having a lot of sugar.
Right.
And at some point, she invented this product developed this product along with, food scientists, however they did it. Can you imagine how much that must have cost?
I know.
But they came out with this product, and it was her own brand, and it was called Summer Sweet.
Wait, I do remember this because we had some of it.
Yes,
it was almost like a monk fruit.
So it was something. It was something like that. It was made from some kind of natural. It wasn't saccharin or aspartame or anything. But yeah, it was made from some kind of natural product, but it was this little container. It was pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to replace sugar with.
Because it had a very low glycemic index.
Right. And I remember we had some, but then right afterwards, Splenda came out.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just such bad luck, you know, because then Splenda was everywhere. You could get it in every grocery store.
Right.
And Summer Sweet, you know, you had to order it from, it was, I don't even know if it was internet at that point. You probably had to call and place your order.
Totally.
But that's the type of businesswoman that she is.
Yeah.
Is that she
would get on that plane. Every now and then we would see her on our overnight flight on a Friday because she would be going to Florida to do QVC or HSN like the next day. So she would like work all week, get on that overnight flight, get to the studio the next morning and be on QVC all day with the products. And that's like, I mean, that's a big deal. That's still a really big deal. If you can get that QVC or HSN deal to move your product, it's like, yeah, that's like, it's major.
Yeah. She was very inspiring and not only, oh, and she wrote poetry too. She had poetry.
Oh yeah. She had a book of poetry.
She had books of poetry. She was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And I think it was before she even became the Suzanne Summers on Three's Company. She was just this blonde bombshell, and they kind of brought her on there as, whoa, look at this super hot blonde who wrote this book of poetry. I think the book of poetry was called Touch Me or something like that.
Yes, it was. You have very good memory.
So she's, you know, between writing books, inventing food products, developing a nutrition plan, then cookbooks that support that nutrition plan or sell that nutrition plan.
Yeah.
Then the Thighmaster, then a jewelry line. Then, I mean,
it went on and on, and was always ready to, if you wanted her to sign a book for your family. And my grandmother came to the set. My grandmother was like, I have your book. Of course, she spent so much time with her and signed the book. And, you know, that's just who she was, she is.
She is an entrepreneur. So not only was there that going on, but it was her marriage with Alan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had been married for many years and were such a strong couple, good couple.
Remember when Alan would come in on Fridays, he'd come to the show, and he always had like it was the 90s people, but he'd have like a purple suit, you know, or like he always had these like colorful suits. I remember he was always so like stylish but for some reason, purple suit, like pants and a blazer, like pops out at me.
Wow. And he has that voice. He's got that bass voice that it's epic.
Yeah.
And again, if you read her book, the story of their getting together is quite amazing. And again, I'm not telling tales out of school. She lays this out in the book.
Yes.
But she was hired to be essentially the Vanna White on a game show
that he was hosting.
That he was the host of. They fired her on the first day. It didn't work out, but she called her mother and said, I met the man I'm going to marry. He was married.
Right.
He was married.
Right.
With kids. And I believe he lived in Canada as well.
Right.
And she called her mother.
Deck was stacked against her.
Yeah. And said, I met the man I'm going to marry. And they ended up being married.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were meant to be. They're still married to this day.
Yeah. And like still very, very much in love.
Yes. And the story in the book of their families coming together, you know, here he is, he leaves his wife to marry this woman who's 10 years younger, but who is truly the person he's meant to be with, and then dealing with his kids. And Suzanne had a child that she had very young. She was divorced from that man. So the story of their blended family figuring out how to come together in her book is compelling. But then you had Patrick, who was married to a woman who was 10 years older than him.
Yes.
And they were a true beshert couple, as the Jewish homies say, my family on my dad's side might have said. So I think beshert means
meant to be.
Meant to be, yes. They're truly intended for each other, two people. And so Patrick had such a great relationship with his wife, and they were married forever.
Yes.
Until she unfortunately passed away pretty recently. But that was a great thing to be around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for you, you had, you know, your parents are still married. They seem like a great couple and seem to be a happy, you know, a happy couple and a happy marriage. For me, my family kind of, you know, fell apart very early in my life. So I just thought, oh, I'll never get married, or, you know, marriage is just not
a thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. For me, that was maybe one of the best things that I got out of being on the show for all those years.
Oh, that's really interesting.
To be able to see Suzanne's relationship with Alan and her very happy marriage and the partnership that they had as business people. And then Patrick, this super, you know, happy relationship with his wife. And, you know, and Patrick's wife was a gourmet cook. She would be, you know, Patrick would come in and tell us about her making, you know, grouse or something. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, what? And these enormous gourmet meals, and they would be having this fine wine from the wine cellar. Yeah. And he was in love with her. You know, he met her. She was a ballerina.
A prima ballerina.
Yes. And he was this kind of ruffian from Montana, just off
doing construction, trying to be an actor.
Living on a house. They lived on a house. Right. So he meets her. She's 10 years older. She's this prima ballerina, beautiful, sophisticated, beautiful dancer. And somehow, you know, they fall in love and they end up living on a dry docked boat. Do you know?
No, I did not know they lived on a boat.
You didn't? No. Yeah, they lived on a boat. That was, yes, dry docked. And Patrick said they were so poor because, yeah, he's trying to be an actor. He's working, you know, odd jobs, construction, that they would eat mung beans. And I never knew what mung beans were, but he had to explain that mung beans, if you, I don't know, put them in water, they will sprout.
Right.
And so then you get double the food. You get to eat the bean, but then you can also eat the sprout. So it's kind of self-regenerating food. And they were so poor that they would eat mung beans.
Wow.
So they could have the bean and the sprout. But, you know, but they were such a happy couple and they had two kids and were always so happy and enjoyed each other. And then, you know, Suzanne and Patrick would hang out with, they would go out as couples.
Yeah.
So Suzanne and Alan and Patrick and Carlin, and they would hang out and have these palatial, you know, these fabulous dinners. And that was a really good thing for me to see. And a really good influence.
Yeah, definitely. Patrick, when I got my first apartment, it was the last year of the show. I had graduated high school. I was in college and I got my first apartment on my own because I didn't want to stay in the apartment. My mom and I just wanted to have a fresh start. I wanted my own place.
Yeah. Independence.
So independence. So I got this new apartment and it was very exciting for me. And I'm just, you know, furnishing it with IKEA and
I remember
Cost
that
Plus
apartment.
World Market.
It was very cute.
It was very cute.
And it was in a really cute neighborhood.
Yeah. And as a, he was so sweet because I had a housewarming for my apartment.
I remember that. I remember.
And he gave me 3 bottles of very expensive Lafite Rothschild red wine from 1979, 81, and 82. I am serious.
How old were you? 18?
I might have been. I was definitely drinking wine. This was not a surprise to anyone. But yeah, I might have been. Now that I think about it. Anyway, I saved them for many, many years because I knew that they were really nice bottles of wine.
Oh, my God.
And then finally, at some point, it was just ridiculous. I think even my mom was what are you doing with these? They're going to go bad. They should be in a cellar. They were probably hundreds of dollars.
Or more. Yeah, Patrick was a very generous gift giver.
Very generous.
One of his very known qualities.
So finally, I was you're right. They're just going to go bad. I mean, I don't have a wine cellar. I barely have a wine rack, from IKEA. We should just pop these puppies open. And so I think me and my boyfriend, Jeff, at the time, over the course of a couple of really nice occasions, my birthday maybe and whatever.
We'll get to the boyfriend, Jeff. We'll get to that. Don't worry, studio audience. We'll get there.
But we popped all those bottles open and I saved the bottles and I made put candles and stuff.
And tell me it was fabulous.
It was fabulous. But what did I know? I was probably drinking Charles Shaw before that. So I was probably God, the tannins. I mean,
oh, that's such a relief, though. I was afraid you were going to say you opened them and they
were rotten.
Turned to dust and they were just vinegar because you had left them, you know, in the sun or whatever.
I remember them being good, but you know, I probably could have been drinking red wine vinegar and been like, don't you think?
Oh,
don't
you
think?
But I mean, well, yeah.
At that stage in my life, it was lost on me.
Oh, but that's Patrick. I mean, he sent me an email not long ago. For my wedding anniversary.
Oh my God.
Saying, you know, I'm so proud of the relationship that you have with Guy. Because my husband, Guy, and I, we met actually when the show,
We met during the show at the end. It was in the final season, but we've been together ever since then. So we met September 27th, 1997, and we've been together ever since. And so he wrote this, and, you know, he met everyone, you know, Guy did.
Yes. And we knew when Guy was coming around in those in that last year, but you didn't get married for a very long time.
Right. We were together for 19 years. Before we got married. And we were together for 10 years before we lived together. So if that gives you any idea of my still wariness about marriage, which was largely healed due to Patrick and Suzanne. But anyway, so he wrote me this email saying, you know, I'm so proud of the relationship that you have with Guy and the life that you've built. And, you know, it was just such a, like, just, oh my God. He will just break your heart. I mean, I'm like getting choked up now. Oh. Like, oh God, thinking about this email. But then I wrote him back saying, you know, you should know that you and your relationship with Carlin is one of the reasons why, you know, this marriage, that I thought that this was possible.
Oh, that's really beautiful. He's really, you know, he's a Facebooker. He doesn't do the Instagram like Suzanne, but he will Facebook every now and then. And I will, like, you know, if I post something with the family, every now and then he'll comment, and it's just, it's so lovely. He'll write something like, I'm just so proud of you, dear daughter. Like, it's so just, he just, even that he, you know, takes the time. And I don't know if you're friends on Facebook, I don't really use it that much anymore, but every now and then, but I am like obsessed with this journey he's on right now. With his new girlfriend, Linda.
Yeah.
After his wife passed, it was a very, you know, hard time. And he grew his hair out very long for a very long time. Remember when we saw him?
Yeah, when we saw him. And they were married for, I don't know, 40 years.
So much.
Something like that. Yeah.
But he has found love again. And they're doing this show. Yes, they've been doing this show all over, like, Europe.
And a travel show?
A traveling show. They're like on the road with their show, but they're playing these incredible places in London and France and Brussels and all these incredible places.
Oh, wait. So they're not doing a travel show.
They're doing
stage
theater.
Show.
Yeah, a stage
show.
Oh, I
see. Okay. Theater.
And they're traveling.
Right. Because she's an actress as well.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
It's really exciting. Yeah. Well. So anyway, I love seeing how happy he is, and it's really wonderful.
Yeah, he's
salt of the earth.
He's just such a jerk. I hate that guy.
All right. Well, next week I'm going to be recapping episode 8. My God, we're up to episode 8.
Whoa.
Season 1, episode 8. It's called Just for Kicks. I'm sure it'll be a doozy. Let's hope we get back from this mid-season slump.
come on, step by step. You can do it.
Turn it around.
But these last two episodes.
Yeah. But if nothing else, we're going to regale with some behind-the-scenes stories. So stay tuned. I'm Christine Lycan.
I'm Stacey Keenan.
And we hope we've given you deja vu. See you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at keenanandlakin@gmail.com and follow us on social at @keenanandlakin. Big shout out to our producer and editor, Stephen Ray Morris. We love you dearly.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay. And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.